Hey, White Sox fans, it's Crystal O'Keefe with episode 14 of Visiting Dugout, brought to you by the Southside Sox, a part of Fans First Sports Network. Today on the show, I have Jeff Ellis, host of Locked On Guardians. Hello.
Hello, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do with Locked On Guardians.
So my name is Jeff Ellis. I've been the host of Locked On Guardians for 4 years now. Hard to believe that. Before that, I was a prospect and draft analyst at Scouting 24/7. And if people know me, it's probably more for that amongst the White Sox fans through the years. I was very lucky in my time covering it to have some good interactions with Sox fans and also with some people in the Sox front office. I don't know if that's a good thing to admit right now or not to Sox fans, but I always say I appreciate the one thing with that front office is when you spend all that time doing the work, and I've told the story on my own podcast, sometimes you hear secondhand for people who are like, you did a good job. I always appreciate that, like, I had actual people from the Sox say, hey, we appreciate your work. So I'll say at least there's good people, even if there's frustration right now.
Yeah, a lot of frustration. I think as we're recording, they are probably about to get Reisendorfed because the weather is bad. It's been raining and all these people are stuck at the ballpark ordering beers only to probably be told the game's not happening tonight. So there's a lot of frustration with him and Rick Hahn.
Yeah, no, I see that. And it's hard to argue when it comes to Reisendorf. It's just badness. Like when the Royals and the Guardians handed out their first $100 million contracts and the White Sox still haven't. It's kind of mind-boggling as an outside observer.
Our highest paid has been Andrew Benintendi, and he is not really doing anything.
Cincinnati's own. I remember covering him in high school, going back to the original conversation. Well, not writing him up in high school, I should say. I didn't go down to Cincinnati to cover him. But yeah, no, it's, like I said, I understand all the frustration with every White Sox fan right now. It's a big market team that kind of operates like they're the Guardians at points. And that's doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, not really. But let's not talk about my terrible team. Let's get into your team right now. So they are sitting just above the White Sox in the American League Central with a record of 17-20, but they are only 3.5 games back now from first place. So what is going on in Cleveland right now?
They have an offense that is... You sometimes wonder if a really good little league pitcher would be effective against them. It has been, to put it kindly, awful. It's at historical rates in the early going. And I know if any Guardians, basically there's two approaches with this and I am neither of them. So it gets me in trouble with all the Guardians fans, which is they're terrible and we should all give up or it's way too early to come to any conclusions. Whereas I say, It's been almost 2 months. If you're historically bad, that's scary, but there is a chance. They're a weird team because they're built on contact. And, you know, anyone who's really in the weeds on baseball knows like contact rates mean you can be really unlucky or you can be really lucky and you can have phenomenal play or terrible play. And right now it's been terrible play for the offense. Right now, that's the division. The Twins and Tigers are like, and the Royals are all down there with Cleveland for this. But Cleveland is pretty much the worst offense in baseball, which is impressive because Oakland was built to fail and Cleveland is somehow worse.
Yeah, I'm convinced Oakland is like a money laundering scheme or something. Yeah.
No, so 100%.
How concerned are you? Because I know Josh Naylor, typical White Sox killer, has had a bit of a sluggish start. And I know, you know, you say you're not really in either camp, but are you kind of concerned with how he's been playing lately?
Well, it's funny you say that because he just hit the home run to take the lead here as I have this going in the eighth.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that against the Angels. But so the outlying data shows he's like hitting the ball as well as a year ago, but the results aren't there. I worry that there's a few guys on the team that seem like they maybe read a little bit more of their press clippings than they should have, or didn't fully dive into this off season. And some are very honest about that, which I appreciate. And I get it. You know, everyone should have time off. I don't think like we need these guys to be committed 24/7 to the game. It wouldn't be good for their mental health. But it did seem like a few guys maybe took a little too much of a break, and his name has come up in that. So they need him. He was such a driver in the heart of that lineup. And right now, I think Jose Ramirez is our only hitter with an OPS over 700. I think Naylor is not even six. It's ugly. The one thing I'll say is I think he'll recover, but then you also have the concern if you go and look at his career data. He's only got 1 year with a runs created plus over 100. It was last year. Every other year before that, he hadn't really looked the part. So hopefully he'll recover, because they really don't have a good answer if he doesn't.
And then in that same vein, especially since you kind of mentioned recovery, we know that Jose Ramirez's thumb injury seemed to be a lot more severe than what was originally stated. So do you have any worry about him? I mean, I know he's probably the best hitter right now, but how much does that really affect him?
I think it's fair to say that like it's a concern, because he's not the guy he was before that thumb injury. It makes me want to pull my hair out a little bit to think about the fact that he had that terrible thumb injury and he still played in the home run derby and took some unnecessary risks. Again, I understand wanting to try things, but when your thumb is so bad, it requires surgery in the offseason. Maybe don't do all the extra things. And with that, now I had a very different injury, but I broke my thumb once. So going on my own, you know, it doesn't bend anymore. You know, you bust it with playing baseball of all things, and you don't want to do things as much. And it felt like more of a free swinger because that thumb wasn't healed, and he hasn't gotten back from that. And, you know, he's still a solid player, but he's a below 800 OPS for a guy who for a lot of years there was a top five MVP guy. That's a huge drop off. After he broke his thumb, he was the definition of average offensively, and he's been above that in his recovery, but he does not feel like the Jose Ramirez of, you know, even 2 years ago, where this was a player who was driving that team, or even at the start of last year, where I think sometimes it gets forgotten, but for that first month, it wasn't like Ohtani or Judge, but a lot of the debates online were Ramirez or Judge, because Ramirez just wasn't swinging at anything. And you know, I read a piece today that maybe he's just like a 2020 guy going forward, which, I mean, that's great production, 270 2020 guy. But from where he was, that's a massive drop off. And Cleveland doesn't have anyone else really approaching that type of offensive production. So he is their best hitter by far. He has been solid still, but you're hoping for more than solid for him at this point.
Yeah, of course. I know that's tough, especially when you're watching these players still do things when they are injured. I mean, I have seen Luis Robert Jr. try to hit the ball with one arm holding up the bat, which is, you know, because they didn't want to put him on the IL. And then yeah. I think about how Liam Hendricks is pretty sure he was dealing with cancer at the end of last season and still going out there and giving his all. So it is scary to think about that and how much more damage they could do. Cause I mean, that can ruin your career if you're constantly kind of re-aggravating that same spot.
100%. I think that kind of happened to like Grady Sizemore as a Cleveland fan back then. Like he never felt like he ever fully got 100% healthy. And when he went from, you know, people sometimes get mad at me when I say a Hall of Fame track saying you can't say that, but I'm like, I feel like he was, and then he wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that too, especially Chris Sale is the other one. I was just talking about him earlier on a podcast where I don't think he's ever going to be back to 100%, which stinks because he's so talented, but he's just getting up there in age and he's not healing as quickly anymore.
Yeah, you know, and you miss out on those guys because Sale was so unique. You know, again, I've been writing long enough. I remember that was one of my first draft classes. I wrote up and I was one of the morons at the time. He's like, I don't think that delivery is going to be successful. And it's not for most guys, but it could work for him. And I was so wrong on so many levels, but it was to the White Sox benefit. And I will say that's maybe the one time they look really well, trading both those pitchers. Like they managed to get out at high peak value. So, but yeah, losing Sale, I think, is bad for baseball.
Yeah. As much as a kind of hot mess that he has become, it does stink for him. But So, you know they're off to a slow start, but do you see anything improving kind of by mid-season, or maybe kind of where they're sitting again in October or like September, I mean, because again, the AL Central really sucks. But
No.
do you see them, climbing back up, since right now it's really just the Twins that are playing good baseball in this division?
One of the things we keep saying, it's a love hate with this team, is the fact that they had the same record, I believe, like on Tuesday as a year ago this time, and that Terry Francona teams just start slow. Ahmed Rosario has been terrible, but you go and you look at his data, he doesn't get hot until the weather gets hot. He is like the worst guy to play. He needs to just live in Miami and he'd be a better player, but he starts really slow. And it just, even though we know he's gonna turn it around and be an average player, it is really hard to watch those like 41 runs created pluses and those, well below league average. Because he's one thing if he's a plus defender at short, he's not. But yeah, we know he's gonna pick it up. Class A kind of had the same issue a year ago. And for as much as Guardian fans like to jump in on Class A and talk about all of his issues, he's still got like an ERA, I think barely over two, and leads the league in saves. But if you talk to your average Guardians fan, they're like, oh, he's a bum. Because his velocity's down. He's only hitting like 99 now. But
Only.
only. But he'll get better with a lot of these guys seem to get better as things heat up. And then for Cleveland, if they're willing to let the young kids play, we've seen it to varying degrees. I mean, last year at this time, I mean, they're still younger than every AAA team in baseball, in baseball, as well as every major league team. But they had a top five farm system, and the stars of that farm system really have just started to trickle in now with guys like Tanner Bibee. And I don't even think Logan Allen was really one of the stars. He's a top 10 guy, but he wasn't one of those top five. But we're seeing some of those guys. So they have those reinforcements if they're willing to go get them.
That's fair. So, do you have kind of your MVP player? I mean, I know it's a month and a half in, but who is really stuck out to you the most on this Guardians team right now?
That's a good question. It's like going through. I feel like it might be Bieber. It might be Jose. Neither of them have been quite as strong as a year ago. Overall, it's probably Jose just because he plays every day and is very clearly their top hitter. Even if it is a bit of a down performance, he's the only guy who's kind of above average in terms of the lineup right now. Hopefully, again, that improves. But when you have, like I said, historically low slugging rates, they went a week between home runs at one point in time as a team. It's pretty poor in terms of they have no power at all. So Jose is at least there, kind of trying to propel the rest of the lineup. So I think it's probably him. Other than that, it's the entire rest of that lineup has been disappointing. And the pitching staff, it's a lot of injuries. We still haven't seen Tristan McKenzie yet. Aaron Civale has had his yearly injury that he has every year.
I do not miss and also miss Tristan McKenzie because, again, he's another White Sox killer, but at the same time, he's just so good and he's so fun to watch.
Yeah, he's that's always been the concern because he's a lot of fun and he's a big personality, but he's just unusual because I remember going to games in Double A and him being charting the games, like doing the pitch charting up in the press box, and he is every bit on as skinny as he looks on TV, and I'll always remember I one time tweeted out like when he was in the minors and I wasn't sure about him. Like there's literally one player in the baseball reference database who was 6'5", 200 pounds. And I go, it's Jason Schmidt. And I didn't tag Jason Schmidt, but he responded to that tweet. He somehow must have some kind of alert on his name, but he let me know that was his high school weight. That was not his major league weight. So he's McKenzie is just you never he's a unicorn and we get to appreciate him when he's there, and hopefully this will be as a Guardians fan, his only injury issue.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, we are going to just take a very quick break to pay some bills, and we'll be right back to talk about the series. And we are back. Again, I'm Crystal O'Keefe, and I am here with Jeff to talk about all things Guardians. So, We're going into this series as we're recording. They're still playing the Astros, the White Sox, but they just lost 3 of 4 to the last place Royals. I don't foresee this Astros series going very well, and I know tensions will be high with Jose Abreu back and on the south side, and he's had a drought with home runs, so I feel like he's just going to hit like 5 this weekend. But how do you feel going into this series when, again, the White Sox and Guardians are on really a similar pace right now?
Right now, I'll be the first to admit, as I look over at the screen and see that they got runners on first and third and one out, I'm not feeling very good. This is a situation where it feels like they're failing in like almost every quadrant, and somehow they're still barely alive, seeing if they can recover. But you know, the offense is just non-existent. The pitching staff is dealt with injuries. The bullpen is not necessarily taking care of business. I made some very now foolish comments about this being the greatest Guardians bullpen of my life, and they seem to just want to really make me look foolish thanks to that statement, with some of the early struggles and injuries. And yeah, I don't think it's been a we literally told people on our podcast this week to enjoy the off day and go take a hike and get outside. So it's going to be it might be interesting Twitter, because this is going to be two extremely frustrated fan bases interacting.
Yeah, we've got somebody writes for another site, but anytime the Sox are kind of already down bad, you know, first or second, he's like, all right, well, enjoy your evening, folks. Like, log off. It's not getting any better.
It so, definitely feels that way with Cleveland sometimes. It's like, hey, yeah, they got a run. We've already lost. We can't get a run. So
exactly. And that's how I feel. It's like one or two runs. It feels like the White Sox cannot come back from that. So I feel you. I feel your frustrations. But do you have any kind of keys for them to take the series? Like any, or again, like kind of the biggest threat right now on the Guardians, the White Sox, that could really have this series go in your favor?
Yeah, Shane Bieber's pitching well for that first matchup game. So I feel pretty okay about that pitching matchup, because I feel like maybe I'm wrong in this, but Lance Lynn has had some struggles this year, unless he's righted the ship since I checked. Wednesday, Peyton Batenfield has been a every other, and he was terrible. He was not good last time. He wasn't terrible. He wasn't good. So he should be good in this one. So you feel a little positive about that, unless the wheels come off. And Logan Allen has been a solid call-up, you know, lefty, super athletic. He was when he wasn't pitching, he was a first baseman in college and moved very quickly through the minors. And it does feel like, if I'm as a Guardians fan, I'm kind of feeling happy about who we're getting to face. I feel like we kind of got off a little lucky in this 3-game matchup, and that might be the biggest thing. Though at the same time, it feels like Clevinger, good or bad, might find an extra gear when he's facing Cleveland. But I don't know if he has anything left, having the little bit that I've watched of him this year and last year. Even finding an extra gear, I don't know what's there. So it just comes down to, it feels like whatever team gets to 4 runs, 5 yeah, runs, it's over. Like if a team can get to 4, just finish the game up right there. There's no point. Yeah. So it just really feels
2 or 3. I think you could finish that game. Yeah, you get kind of the bottom order. We've got Lance Lynn, who has had just an awful, awful, awful season so far, which stinks because he's definitely regressing. And again, he's one of those, he's my age, he's getting older. So it doesn't look like it's going to get any better this season. And then you've got Clevinger, and then you've got Michael Kopech, who is so hot and cold on the mound as well. I love him dearly, but man, he is frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it's avoiding Giolito, who's pitching better, and then Cease, who I know maybe isn't as strong as a year ago, but we all remember what he did a year ago, mm-hmm, is hugely beneficial if you're Cleveland. You know, not facing those two arms is the ideal. And then again, they seem to, doesn't matter who they, I mean, they made Patrick Corbin look decent, and I'm not sure he has anything left. Two unearned runs in his start, or no, two earned runs, then two unearned. It's, I mean, that it's been a every guy who you think is washed has limited Cleveland to two runs. So this could be exactly what the doctor ordered for Lance Lynn. Maybe I'm sounding too fatalistic. But, you know, they got four tonight. So that's a high. I had one of our, and the game is tied for Cleveland, managing to blow that save in the ninth here. But I had one of our listeners tell me that since the first or second game of the year where Cleveland won by five runs, they have not won a game by more than two runs.
Oh, geez.
So every single game has been a one or two run affair.
Yeah, we've dealt with that. I mean, it's kind of funny. The White Sox, they either score 0 to 2 runs or suddenly they blow up on the Reds and just get like 7 runs in an inning. So, again, just a really hot and cold team. I love that this has turned into like nihilism podcast with these teams. Yeah.
Well, Cleveland just gave up a sac fly to Brandon Drury. So they went in 4-3 lead. It's now 5-4 as we're recording, and they'll probably end up losing. So that's been kind of the year for them. Emmanuel Class A is, I don't know, I'd have to look up what is he, but it's the weird thing where like he's blown like 3 or 4 saves, but his ERA is 2.7 and he leads the league in saves still. So it's like I always worry that Tito likes to ride that pen very hard and like use those guys heavily. And then we kind of saw Andrew Miller and Cody Allen from the last generation both wear out before they left. And Cody Allen, it's like he's Cleveland's all-time saves leader, but he was done by baseball before he hit 30 because he got used so heavily. So I'm just like, hopefully that isn't what we're seeing here again.
Yeah, we definitely have some bullpen woes too. We've got two that have been great that we weren't really expecting. And then we've got kind of our old guards that have just, you know, Aaron Bummer, Ronaldo Lopez, just not doing it anymore. So it really will just kind of be the battle of who can score a couple runs. Whew, that sounds dreadful. Let's move on from nihilism talk. So going forward with, you know, kind of just the season in general, do you have teams that you see as kind of like your clear champions or an underdog team that, you know, might get lucky with a wild card and go super far into the playoff season?
Yeah. Is it cheating to just talk about the Rays a bunch? I mean, they've been kind of unbelievable in terms of what they have done. You know, going around, I do kind of like the Brewers is, I guess, would probably be a sleeper team. You know, they haven't even got the best out of their top starters. They've got a lot of fun young outfield prospects. And even though like Garrett Mitchell went down, they still have like Frelick and Joey Weimer. And they just have this whole stable of kids who they're rushing up there. And it's weird to think the Pirates are going to hold on and the Cardinals are going to stay that bad. But the Brewers being a half game behind the Pirates, and if they get their pitching back on track and healthy, and I don't know if they'll call up Churio this year, who might be the best hitting prospect in the minors right now, but it's like they're an interesting team with the potential to really break out. And then I've liked the Diamondbacks for a while. I liked what they were building and putting in place down there with a lot of their young players. We're seeing a lot of those young players get up as well there. And I think they're ahead of the Padres, right? Or are they right about the same? But, you know, was it Brandon? Anyone who's a Locked On Guardians listener knows that I'm terrible at pronunciation. As much as I try, it's like a dyslexic thing. Like I start to get confused with the right and the wrong ones in my mind. So,
right.
But Brandon P, we'll call him Buffett.
I'm trying to remember how it's pronounced.
It's like, I know he wasn't great this year, but he's another really interesting call up. And everyone knows about Corbin Carroll and as the big name, but they've got a lot of really good players. They had a lot of really good drafts in there. And that also means they have the ammunition that if like they decide to go and go in, they can go out and get someone. So I think those are probably my sleeper teams. I think the Rays are the one thing you'll say is like they've lost two starters to potentially for the entire year in Rasmussen and Springs, but again, they just, one of their best relievers, Kevin Kelly, came from Cleveland, who didn't protect him in the Rule 5. Like, they're just very good at finding that guy off the books. And he wasn't, when we talked about who Cleveland is going to lose in the Rule 5, we mentioned him, but he was like the fourth reliever we mentioned, even as like a podcast that is in the off season and looking for things to talk about as we have to go 5 days a week. It's like, we're diving deep, and Kevin Kelly was still like fourth on our list, and he's been phenomenal for the Rays. They're really good at knowing what they do. They're really good at finding the guys that fit their style and approach. And they can, if a team can weather those injuries, it's them. And, you know, it's like, okay, so they'll do their service time manipulation, and by the end of the year, they'll have Taj Bradley in that rotation ready to go, as well as all their young players.
Yeah, I, with the Rays, and you mentioned, you know, them just finding whatever. White Sox, DFA'd Jake Diekman, he was terrible for us. He, you know, you, it was one of those players where it's like him and Aaron Bummer, you hear, oh, well, Diekman's warming up in the pen, and you're like, oh, no, please, no. And he went to the Rays, and he had his first shutout inning, you know, just like two nights ago. And I was like, you couldn't do that in Chicago, but you go to the Rays, who don't need your help, and you do it for them.
Yeah, the Rays currently have Yandy Diaz, who Cleveland gave away. Him and Clevenger were in AA at a time where there was nothing in AA, and that was, I lived near that stadium, and since I was media, it was great. You know, you park down the street, so you don't have to pay for parking, and they did press box food, so go get dinner on the rubber ducks, watch a game, and you know, there was nobody there, but then you slowly realize that Clevenger could throw, and Diaz was really interesting, and Diaz is like fourth in baseball in OPS. He's desperately what they need. And then Harold Ramirez, who Cleveland, I mean, I was okay with cutting him. That one isn't as bad, but he's their DH, and then Francisco Mejia is their backup catcher. So they have all of these Cleveland players in that lineup as well. And I'm like, okay, we just, nothing goes right with Cleveland and the Rays. One of their top prospects, we traded a pitcher for that we cut halfway through last year. And the guy we traded them is one of the rising prospects in baseball. So just don't trade with the Rays. Don't, that they have a black magic that you don't want to get caught up in.
I'm telling you, it's they brought those Devil Rays jerseys back, and now they've got that devil magic brewing somewhere down there.
Feels like it for sure.
Good for them, but man, it's rough when you gotta face them. Well, again, so thank you so much for coming on. Again, please just remind people that where they can find you.
Sure, you can, if you want to find out more about us chatting Guardians, you can follow Locked On Guardians, YouTube, or the podcast. You can follow me personally at Jeff MLB Draft. I still do a lot of draft content, as you can tell by the name there, gearing up for a historic class at the top of this year's. So we'll see. I'm projecting, just for fun, I'll say I've been projecting Aiden Miller to the White Sox. We'll see if that holds true or not, the prep third baseman. But yeah, it's, like I said, I've always appreciated the front office, and through the years I've gotten to know, you know, quite a few of the writers over there that have been very, until you, it's only been gentlemen. So when I say that it's a cool group of gentlemen, it's because I'd only met gentlemen until this. So now I'll have to expand, but you know, that group has been really kind and fun to interact with over the years. So I know Guardians and White Sox can be a little chippy at times. I have seen that. I've heard the stories and wars about hit by pitches, but I hope everyone will have some fun with this series, and maybe we can have a bunch of 11 to 10 games and just shock the world.
That would be perfect, because who knows? Yeah, they do get a little chippy, and it's kind of funny, but I think either fans are just so frustrated and they're turning it off, or it's become, oh my gosh, it's laughable how bad you are this year. So it might not be as chippy, as long as no one gets hit by a pitch. But yeah. So again, thank you so much. Go follow Jeff. Go follow Locked On Guardians as well. And best of luck to you in the series.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks.